8:19 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard, Jason Martin from the Big Six and Fox Sports Radio doing a great job of coming in and helping us out with Blaine on vacation and Kevin on the glory ride with Belmont. And, of course, every time this week, we bring in Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com. Brent, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
We're good. Brent, I got to ask you just off the top, Rick Bird, a guy who I think, if Tennessee could do a redo over the last 25 or 30 years, you think maybe they should have looked harder at him and brought him in at least during one of their coaching searches?
Well, sure. I mean, you look at the success he's had, and the guy's a fantastic basketball coach. I think it's unfortunate that sometimes we get caught up in what we perceive somebody can and can't do in the recruiting world. And I think that was the biggest thing with Rick Bird, is a lot of people were not sure he could be an elite recruiter. I think that's misguided at times. He's done a fantastic job at Belmont. Love watching his teams play. So happy for what they did last night and the way they played against Temple. He's a fantastic basketball coach, and I think would have been successful in a lot of places. I just don't think the timing worked out right at Tennessee. And quite frankly, by the time he got some of the national recognition he's gotten, a lot of people concerned a little bit about age and that kind of thing as well. So it's unfortunate because I think he's one of the best basketball coaches anywhere in the game of college basketball.
All right, as far as Tennessee is concerned, any worries of a hangover from the Auburn loss?
I don't think you worry about a hangover because you've had days to put it behind you. This team's been in the tournament before. Their eyes are on a bigger prize in front of them. You know, I just think that you worry about just how you play and trying to stay in the moment. You know, everybody you talk to, all the fans you talk to are talking about Louisville and Sweet 16s, Elite 8s, chance to go to the Final Four. And you just can't, you can't look past anybody. And every favorite team in the tournament is going to show clips of Virginia losing last year as the number one seed to remind their team that you better show up to play every night. And watching that game, the games that were played last night, particularly that first game that took place, you had some individuals take over the game, and they were the difference. And the Jenkins kid from Fairleigh Dickerson was unbelievable last night. So, you got to show up and be ready to play. I don't think Tennessee has a prolonged hangover from what happened to them on Sunday, which was obviously a thorough beatdown by Auburn.
And the truth of the matter is, Brent, a number one seed would have been nice. They would have had Gonzaga's seed and probably their geographic destination. So in retrospect, maybe the number two seed here and being in Virginia's bracket, might actually be a better thing for them.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I really don't. I think when you look at the other number one seeds out there, and if Tennessee had gotten to the one line, then one of those number one seeds was going to fall. It wasn't going to be Duke or Virginia. So you would have probably had North Carolina or you would have had Gonzaga in your bracket. And I think Tennessee probably matches up against Virginia better than they do those two teams, even though they beat Gonzaga earlier in the year. It's a Gonzaga team at full strength. You would have been on the West Coast. I think anytime you can play closer to home, I think because of the travel and everything involved there, it just makes life easier for you. So you got to go 5 hours to Columbus, Ohio for the first two rounds. And if you're fortunate enough to get out of there, then you got to go 4 hours to Louisville, Kentucky. And I don't think that's a bad setup at all for Tennessee. And I do think they match up pretty well with Virginia if both those teams get to that point. Now, there's a lot of work to be done before you get to that point. I think Tennessee handles Colgate. I don't think the second round matchup is the easiest game in the world. I think Tennessee will be the favorite. They should be. But you got to show up and play, because if it's Cincinnati, Cincinnati's going to ugly the game up. They're going to offensive rebound. They're going to force turnovers. And Tennessee obviously has to play, much better than what they played on Sunday against a team that likes to do that to you. So we'll see. I don't think you take anything for granted in this tournament. Tennessee had a reminder of that a year ago with what happened to them in Loyola, Chicago.
Brent Hubbs, our guest here on the Wake Up Zone this morning. Brent, Auburn beat down Tennessee in that SEC final game. And it was 8 days after they had beaten him on senior day, that, you know, that record of not beating a top five team since 95 came to an end for them. But I could not help but watch that team, even though it's been inconsistent, that team, meaning the Vols in this case, they've been inconsistent defensively. Their defense let them down against LSU and they lost. They could not guard the three, could not guard the perimeter against Auburn in either one of those two games, and that cost them. But tell me this, watching the semifinal against Kentucky, how much energy did Tennessee expend winning that game? It felt to me like from the jump on Sunday, they just didn't look right at all. Not that they were just totally beat down, but they just looked like they had left it all on the floor just to get to that final in Nashville.
Well, Jason, I mean, let's talk about the Saturday game, first of all, against Kentucky. One of the most intense basketball games I've ever watched. The tension in the arena, you could cut with a knife, the high level of play, the intensity that the game was played at, the intensity that the game was coached at, was at a different level. I mean, Rick Barnes stood the whole game, basically. We haven't seen that from him. I mean, he knew how big of a game it was. And there was a ton of energy expended in that game. So that's the first thing that comes out of there. Now, everybody that's an Auburn fan goes, well, I don't want to hear none of that because Auburn played four games in 4 days.
Right.
And they did. And that's a huge credit to Auburn. But remember a couple things. One, Tennessee played on the quickest turnaround of anybody. And it's Tennessee's fault because they didn't beat LSU in the regular season. They didn't beat Auburn in the regular season. So they end up in that night game on Friday night and they tip off about 10 o'clock. And then they turn around and play less than 24 hours later, about 18 hours later, I think, 16 hours later, against Kentucky in a high-intensity game. That game gets over, and then you turn around and tip it off less than 24 hours later. Auburn had about 24 hours between every game. Okay, so they had more time between games, even though they played the extra game. Here's the other big factor that nobody's really talked about. Auburn goes about 10 deep. And Bruce Pearl does a great job rotating his players. He's always wanted to play a deep bench. He's always trusted in a bench. He doesn't play guys a lot of 36, 38-minute type games. Go look at the number of minutes that Grant Williams played on Friday night to beat Mississippi State. Same for Jordan Bone. Go look at the number of minutes they played on Saturday against Kentucky. Those minutes were much – I mean, those two guys, and throw Schofield in there as well, those three guys, who's Tennessee's big three – played as many minutes in two games as some of the Auburn starters had in three games. And so that's a factor that not a lot of people talked about coming out of the Auburn game. I think the biggest issue with the Auburn game, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I think it's a bad matchup for Tennessee. I think Bruce Pearl's system's been a bad matchup for Rick Barnes since they first met when they were, you know, Rick Barnes was at Texas and Bruce Pearl was at Tennessee. He had success against them there, Bruce Pearl did. I think that Rick Barnes' defensive system has a hard time matching up with what Auburn does offensively.
All right, we'll go another round with Brent Hubbs, talk some more hoops, the matchup with Colgate, and also spring football, of course. 828 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Electro 831 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard, Jason Martin. Of course, we're speaking to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com. Tennessee, of course, will open Friday in the NCAA tournament against Colgate as a number two seed. Jason?
Yeah, and you can, just to mention it, it is that time of year for the mayhem to begin. Sign up today to play 104.5 The Zone's Bracket Madness for your chance at $500. 104.5thezone.com. Click on the contest tab. Register to play today. The registration deadline tomorrow at 11 a.m. So you got time to go pick those Vols. Sign up, create your bracket today. For official rules and details, go to 104.5thezone.com/zone-bracket-madness. We were talking about the quick turnaround for Tennessee, Brent, there at the end of the last segment. You talked about Grant Williams. One thing I noticed on Sunday, and one of the things I pointed out on the Big Six on Monday is, look, Grant Williams can't be passive, and he can't be invisible. He needs to be the opposite. He needs to be selfish when things aren't going right. But I looked up during the break. He played 31 minutes against Kentucky, and that was a hard 31 minutes. He played 26 against Mississippi State the night before. So he definitely had some mileage. Does that explain some of the reasons why it felt like he was passive, or did Auburn just do a really good job on him?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I've said all year long that Grant Williams is not selfish enough. I think there are times that this team needs a bucket and he should will himself to get a bucket. We saw that the last 3 minutes of the Kentucky game, that he willed himself to the free throw line or make a play. We saw it against Vanderbilt there in Nashville when Tennessee had to have it. We've seen it at times, but it comes late in games when it's really crunch time and Tennessee's, you know, in a bad way or Tennessee is in danger of getting beat. I thought on Sunday it was imperative that he try to impose his will early in the game and establish himself. I thought that he could have gone the game at Auburn. I thought he could have scored 35 or 40 points had he played that way. I didn't think Tennessee got him the ball at Auburn enough. And then on Sunday, I think the same thing happened in the first half. Auburn did a good job of fronting in the post, but Tennessee, I didn't think, looked for Grant Williams necessarily early enough in the possession. There were a couple times early in the possession they got it to him in the paint, and he kicked it back out. And I just felt like he had to establish himself, and I didn't think he was assertive enough early in that game when Auburn wasn't shooting the ball particularly well from beyond the three-point line. I thought Tennessee had that early four-point lead, could have stretched it out, could have gotten Auburn in some more foul trouble had they gone through Grant Williams some more, and I didn't think Tennessee did that enough. Again, credit Auburn's defense. They've been able to do some things to Grant Williams that nobody else in the league has early in games. Now, Grant's got his points in the second half, but they've taken him as the first option away early in games, and they deserve some credit for that. Missouri's probably the other team in this conference that did as good a job of that as anybody in the first half of basketball games. I didn't think Britt Barnes said it. He didn't think Grant had a lot of juice 5 or 6 minutes into the game, and that was pretty obvious, and he did not get off the fast start Tennessee needed.
Brent, after what happened against Auburn with the Tigers really torching the Vols from the three-point line, now Tennessee faces a Colgate team that pretty much lives out there in the arc. As you know, they have three shooters who are over 37% from the three-point line. Talk about this matchup and what you think the mindset has to be.
Well, the first mindset for Tennessee has to be to eliminate dribble penetration. They cannot let the ball get dribbled into the paint with ease and get beat off the dribble one-on-one. When that happens, Tennessee's defense is a help-based defense, as most man defenses are, but they really help. They really help at the rim. And what happens is a lot of times those guys who are guarding perimeter players get sucked into the paint, play help defense, and they give up open looks from the three-point line. So I think to take away three-point shooting, what Tennessee has to do is they have to eliminate straight-line drives to the rim, which creates all the help defense. You go back to the Kentucky game in Knoxville. Tennessee was fantastic closing out on three-point shooters, and the biggest reason why is they weren't extended inside the paint in their help defense so they could get back out and close out. You look at the Auburn game, they gave up too many straight-line drives. They gave up points in transition that were open threes. Tennessee's transition defense has to be better. I don't think Colgate will run a lot, but they cannot allow guard penetration for the kick-out three, because that's been a bugaboo for Tennessee all season long. Lamonte Turner, Jordan Bone, Jordan Bowden have to keep the ball in front of them on the perimeter. I think that's paramount, not just for round one. I think that's the biggest key for Tennessee defensively for the entire tournament. If you look at the last four games, Tennessee's given up 76 points or more to their opponent. Now, they've won two of those games, and they've lost to Auburn twice in those four games. You're not going to win a lot of tournament games in the NCAA tournament if you're giving up 75-plus points. That's not how NCAA tournament basketball is played. It's about defense. Tennessee's got to get down and get gritty on the defensive end, particularly their perimeter defense.
Brent, this is a team that just missed winning the SEC regular season title. I don't know if you want to say they just missed winning the tournament because the game was a blowout, but what constitutes a successful NCAA tournament run for this team?
Well, it has nothing to do with what happened in the regular season or in the SEC tournament. You know, had Tennessee won against Auburn on Sunday, fans would be excited and be really happy, and then their attention would turn quickly and say, hey, if this team's not in the Final Four or this team's not here, it's a bad run, or in some cases, in the eyes of some fans, a bad season. I don't agree with it being a bad season at all, because this team has brought a lot of joy to a lot of fans throughout the regular season. But it's a tournament sport. That's what you judge it on. I think Tennessee, you know, I think the opportunity to play for a Final Four. I think if you get to the Elite Eight and you're playing Virginia with a chance to go to the Final Four, then I think you've had a good run. I mean, I think that's where you're expected to be. You know, you get into those regional championship games, anything can happen, but you got to get there. So I think when you look at this season for Tennessee, you know, the opportunity to be playing on the last day in Louisville, Kentucky, I think would constitute a good run in the eyes of everybody with an opportunity to win that game. So we'll see what happens. You first got to take care of Colgate, and you got to be ready to play on Sunday afternoon, and you don't know what kind of matchup you're going to get in that Sunday afternoon game.
All right, switching to football, we know that the Vols have gone through strength coaches like Jason goes through Ascots. But I thought it was interesting because we always joke that every year, you know, it sounds like the strength program, you know, is really great. But in this particular case, you guys talked about the importance of keeping strength coach Craig Fitzgerald when Pruitt came in.
Well, they haven't had any consistency there. And one of the things about if you're going to grow and get better and you're going to establish your culture, and you're going to do all the things that you need to do to rebuild the program, it's got to have some consistency in it if it's the right people. Now, if you're trying to rebuild with the wrong people, consistency is a bad thing. But Craig Fitzgerald has a great reputation as a strength coach. This program needed the same message extended to them for an extended period of time. And, of course, Craig Fitzgerald nearly left to go to Maryland, and that would have been 5 strength coaches in 5 years. And that is a huge detriment to this program. This is the first time players in this program have heard the same message back-to-back years in the strength room. A year ago, they were trying to figure out who this crazy guy was. Now they know who he is. Now he's here for another year. It speeds up the process of not just physically getting faster, bigger, stronger, but also in creating the work ethic that this coaching staff is looking for and all those things. I thought it was fascinating. Jonathan Kongbo was so open about it at Pro Day about how huge it was. And here's a guy who went through multiple strength coaches. And he talked about he was almost jealous that guys were getting to have the same guy back-to-back year, something he never had. So I think it's big for Tennessee. Doesn't mean they're going to suddenly win the East and all that kind of stuff, but to grow and move forward at the clip fans want you to move forward at, that they needed that consistency in the offseason, and they've gotten that by retaining Craig Fitzgerald.
Weird timing for this question, but I really just want to get your feel on this because I've been trying to figure this out and going through just various machinations in my head for the last handful of weeks, I would say, and this is back to basketball, and I'm looking at Tennessee's potential run in the NCAA tournament. I'm thinking about Grant Williams. He can come back to school. He's being projected in a lot of ways kind of in the mid-20s in the NBA draft. I don't know if he gets any better if he comes back. He's a 2-time SEC Player of the Year, obviously. I look at this and say, if they go deep, does that make it more or less likely he's going to leave? And just on feel, what chance do you think there is of Grant Williams deciding to come back for his senior season?
Well, I think there's a chance, but I think that you've made the best point. I think the question Grant Williams and those around him are going to have to answer and going to have to, you know, decide upon is when he comes out of that work in Chicago with the pre-draft stuff, which he'll go to and not have an agent, and he'll get to work out with those guys and work out with individual teams, and something I think it's great that the NBA does, by the way. There are going to be some questions, and the biggest question is going to be, I think, where does he play defense in the NBA? Who can he guard in the NBA? Now, the question Grant Williams has to ask himself is, a year from now, is that going to be the same question? Okay? And if it is, then Grant Williams' decision is going to be, is my draft line as high as it's going to get? Or can I come back and really work myself up another 5-10 spots in the draft? You know, now, the question is he going to be really submitted as a first-round pick coming out of those draft workouts? If he is, I think Grant Williams goes to the NBA. If he's not, then I think he comes back. But the question is, can he earn himself that landing spot in the draft with that pre-draft workout stuff? Because it's no offense to Chad Ford, no offense to the other mock draft stuff out there, one of the things about the NBA is you don't have to take a guess on what a mock draft says, okay, because you can do this without an agent, and you get to work out with individual teams. So a general manager is going to tell you what he thinks of you. A head coach in the NBA is going to tell you what he thinks of you. It's not going to be some guesswork by some, you know, unknown committee that sends back a random number like you get in the NFL side. This is going to be face-to-face conversations, real conversations with NBA executives. And I think Grant Williams will know exactly where he stands coming out of Chicago. If the number's right, I think he goes. And if he feels like he can really help himself for another year, then I think there's a chance he comes back. Same for Jordan Bone, by the way. I mean, I think he's going to go through the same process, and it'll be the same procedures with him moving forward. So those two guys will both handle that way. And I think Schofield showed them the pluses and minuses of it last year, and I think they'll learn from that and go.
Brent, great stuff as always. Have a good week, and we'll speak to you next Wednesday.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Brent Hubbs from BallQuest.com. Great place to go for information on Tennessee basketball, even baseball, and, of course, football. All right, on the other side, ESPN popped the question. They brought the rose. What's Peyton Manning going to do now? 844 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.